But let's start with what you're doing now, and then we'll work from there, if that's okay with you.
So I've started this new company called IF, and we make a game called IF. It's inspired by the Kipling poem of the same name, which is a poem all about character and empowerment. Basically, there's a tremendous need today for children to learn a new set of skills that has become known as SEL, which stands for social and emotional learning, or you could think of it as emotional intelligence. And these are skills that kind of fell in the cracks in the last 100 years, and there's a tremendous need and a tremendous opportunity for people to develop these life skills. And most schools don't teach them. There's no textbook for it. You know, something the parents don't really have the time for anymore, like they would have back in the old days if you were living in a tribe and every kid was growing up with their parents all day long and having their parents be role models and going to religious services all the time. These things just don't happen in modern life. You really have to meet people where they're at. So I have a background in the game industry, and it made sense to me to say, hey, why can't we use the same process that I pioneered in the making of the EA Sports games at Electronic Arts? Why can't we use a similar production process, bringing in experts and bringing in the concrete content and making it wrap around a really fun game that is clearly in today's world the best way to meet kids where they're at, you know, where their attention and motivation already is, and get them to play a game they want to play just because it's fun and get tremendous learning benefit.
Have you succeeded?
So far, so good. Now, right now, it's only available for the iPad, but we're planning within a period of months to scale across all the smartphones, all the tablets, and all the PCs. So this will be a service that's widely available. The current version that's available has been very well received by the media, by the academic community, and by consumers. And we get a lot of feedback now from the 300,000 people that have already downloaded and tried the iPad app, and it's almost universally positive. You know, we have a really great, you know, we have 700 reviews in the review score and in the App Store, and 90% of those reviews are 5 stars out of 5. And we get raves from doctors and psychologists and parents of autistic children, from teenage girls and adults that weren't really in our target audience. And then, of course, you see a lot of charming things said by kids that are playing the game.
That's interesting, because you've almost hit the next question I had. Almost any kid, actually most adults, have played some of your games. Some of the things you've created have come about because of you. And certainly all of them have come about through technologies and techniques that you've brought to reality. You've made lots of money. You've been successful. You've had some things that haven't been quite as successful. But is that the measure for you of success? The money is going to be a given. It works or it doesn't. But what is the measure for success? How do you know?
One of the things that has been part of the personal journey for me is that I've probably experienced a pretty wide range of human events, both good and bad, in my life, and have discovered deficits that I had as a person and things that I wasn't very mature about. And honestly, the way I learned about SEL was that my children all ended up attending a school that was one of the pioneers. And I began to realize that my children had skills that I didn't have, and there was something that I needed to learn more about, just in the interest of my own development and, you know, improving my own social skills. This has just been part of the kind of humbling experience for me, you know, growing up and figuring out how to mature into a better adult. And part of that for me is moving away from the value system that I grew up with around materialism, shifting over to a value system driven more by compassion and being aware that we are all in this together, we're all connected, and we all basically embody the butterfly effect that whatever we're gonna do, it's gonna affect other people. And it was about 5 years ago that one of the linchpins of this fell into place when I had the awareness that my generation would not fix global warming. And I felt really ashamed, and I felt really horrible that, wow, we're just gonna pass this problem on to our children. And that's when it hit me that, well, then what's gonna need to happen at some point is the children are gonna have to have a different value system than we have. And years went by, and then I realized, wait a minute, SEL, that's the value system, and I know how to help more people learn this because I know how to put it in a game.
And so how?
How?
So what's... How do you make people aware of SEL?
Okay, so one thing I want to point out about the way we think about this is that we're targeting kids that are 6 to 12. And the reason for that is if they're younger, they're not reading yet, they're not dealing with school climate, they're not yet saddled with a lot of academic expectations, and they have limitations in their reasoning and conceptual thinking capacity. Now, we also don't want to try to force this on teenagers because they typically have individuated and they're less likely to do something that a teacher or a parent tells them to do in their spare time. But in that 6 to 12 age range, these are kids that are dealing with all kinds of school climate and social maturing issues, whether they've just left the home and are dealing with separation anxiety and the confusion of the classroom environment for the first time, or they're older kids going into middle school dealing with puberty and social peer group pressure and so on. It's a really rich period of time where these issues are coming to the forefront, and it's a time period where it's still possible for teachers and parents to curate the media experiences that those kids have. You still have a shot, but then it's up to somebody like me from the game industry to know how to keep that kid engaged because it's fun. And we don't want the children to smell the spinach. We want them to get into the fun of the game. Let me make clear that this is not about the gamification of learning, because in that kind of design, which has generally failed, the kids can smell the spinach. They can tell that you're trying to teach them something, and they can tell that it's not just a fun game. What I believe is that the game has to be the foundation, and it has to be a really first-class game experience so that it's really fun and really engaging. And the reason for that is that learning starts with attention and with motivation. So science has found that the most powerful form of motivation is intrinsic and autonomous. That really simply means that if I pay you to do something, that's not as effective as if you have your own internal free choice reasons for why you want to do what you want to do. And the thing about kids right now is that they all want to be on these devices. They all want to be playing games, and that's where their attention is. Their motivation ties into a game where they want to perform well. So if you've been able to build a game where, yes, they have a desire to engage and pay attention because they want to perform well, and they're motivated to do things that feel like they're part of a compelling story with compelling characters. And I've always been a big believer in the definition of a story, that it's something interesting that happens to characters that you care about. And we use the power of story. We're big fans of Joseph Campbell and his hero's journey, and also the recognition that science has found that information that you hear through a story is better remembered than information that you just, say, read in a textbook. So I think that's because in a story, you've got emotional factors in addition to the cognitive factors, and they can kind of link together and make it more potent and deeper. So we basically got this idea of, you know, great game technology and game design with great story, and then bringing in the master teachers that are the world's leading authorities on how to teach and how to measure SEL, social and emotional learning, and then using the government teaching standards that have emerged in the last 5 years about what is it that they want children of different ages to know about SEL. And it's a curriculum that spreads over time like mathematics. And if you look at math and the way you start out learning to count on your fingers, and then later on you're going to get to algebra and finally calculus, the SEL equivalent of that is that when you first start school, you're learning how to function in the classroom. You're learning about what are your responsibilities, where can you go to get help, how do you pay attention. In SEL, those are actually important skills. But then in addition, basics like what is an emotion? Emotions can get escalated, and you have tools that you can use to calm down. So those are kind of beginning SEL skills. The algebra equivalent of SEL would be empathy, which is being able to recognize what somebody else is feeling. The calculus equivalent would be compassion, which is feeling like that other person because you're now able to suffer with them if they're in distress. And by the way, humans have a unique capacity for this. We have what are called mirror neurons. Again, this is a recent emerging piece of science that we have the ability to neurologically completely connect with and feel what somebody else is feeling. If you're watching somebody take out a knife and cut themselves, you're neurologically capable of experiencing what they're experiencing. So we are literally evolved to experience compassion. But in our value system, we tend to shut that down, and we have all these marketing signals surrounding us in our culture about how you need more stuff and more money and more power and more status. So I came from that world and I had all that stuff. So part of the transformation for me personally is realizing that that didn't make me happy. There are, in fact, many scientific studies now that materialism does not make anybody happier. And what I learned from my own journey is that relationships and compassion do actually create connections with people and positive feedback from people that really does make you happier. And it's the pathway towards solving these problems like global warming. So what could be better than working on that?
Interesting, because to me, it's always been intuitive and that sort of sense. Maybe having spent more time in Europe.
I don't think there's any doubt that we have an internal compass and we're capable of figuring out a lot of these things on our own. But there are a lot of awarenesses that can be developed. And, you know, again, if you study Buddhism, if you study a variety of different religions or different meditation practices, there's a lot in common between formal SEL teaching and all of those other practices. And again, some of these things are perhaps things that one could figure out intuitively. But if you have really good instruction, you're going to develop your awarenesses in a broader and deeper fashion. You're going to be able to be much more mindful. And, you know, that's kind of a starting point. And once you become kind of aware, much more aware of what's going on with yourself emotionally, then you can move on to looking at, well, how am I regulating how I express those emotions? And, you know, when do I choose to be assertive? And if I get elevated, how do I deal with that? How do I calm myself? And that kind of goes into the social side, which is in the context of having feelings and being a creature that has all these feelings. How do you develop positive relationships in that context? There's no question that everybody can get better at this with some help.
Well, I suppose it's a bit like you can find your way to New York from Phoenix, but it's a hell of a lot easier with a map, isn't it? Somebody to guide you.
Indeed.
Do you have anything else on this?
Well, I'm just intrigued by the whole concept. I was also interested in what you said about having had feedback from parents with autistic kids, because I would think that actually what you're doing plays very heavily into that field.
We didn't set out to specifically focus on children with developmental delays or autism, but we're resonating with that audience because I think anytime you have a special need or a critical need, there's a lot more desire for there to be new tools and new methods of approach. Yeah, we're getting really positive feedback, and it's really motivating and exciting to have that going on. I guess one of the things I want to add about this is that it's only really been in the last 10 years that the research has been done that has found that schools that teach SEL, again, there's a handful of these pioneering schools that have begun to teach it the last 30 years, and longitudinal studies were able to be completed that determined that, yes, schools that teach SEL, they have a dramatic improvement in school climate, student functioning, student well-being. You know, it reduces incidences of bullying and discipline problems. It basically improves the likelihood that the student is not going to be depressed or be thinking about suicide. And, youth suicide it's a much more challenging problem today because a 9-year-old can Google how to do it and may be intimidated into doing it by cyberbullying, which is an entirely new phenomenon. So we've got these fragile and interesting questions. And research has found that, if you teach SEL, it improves all of these emotional issues. But more recently, research has found that academic scores go up because of teaching SEL in schools. Not a shocker that you're going to do better in math or English. It's logical that if you've learned these skills of SEL, you're going to function better, and that when you function better, you're going to be able to organize and pay attention and get the academics taken care of. So whether we're talking about a special needs child or just any child, this is good stuff.
Is SEL something that older people can learn, or is it something that they have to then modify their whole life pattern?
Developing an understanding of our own identity is a lifelong project. It's never going to stop. We're capable of being lifelong learners and constantly improving. SEL skills can be acquired at any time. I think for somebody who's older, they have a kind of a base of human experience where they've got more maturity from everything that they've been through and everything that they've learned. You know, frankly, almost anybody could have the ability to, go through a game like ours and enjoy it and learn from it just because it's fun, even though some of the early skills that we're teaching may be redundant for them. We also do other things. So for example, we're working with the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence on a EQ test, and we're going to host a free version of that test on our website. So this is something where, in addition to having a, say, your 8-year-old son playing IF, maybe the parents will take this EQ test and talk about it. If they have a teenage son, maybe they'll get him to take the test. And then, of course, the way the game works is that there's what we call a dashboard. So that basically there's information being sent from the game to the parent or the teacher about how the child is doing and what events have taken place in the game and what they've accomplished. And we suggest conversation starters. So there's really an opportunity here for a whole community within the family that includes the adults so that everybody has a chance to learn more about these skills.
It's intriguing. Very intriguing.
Fascinating. I find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Should we talk a little bit about the history and how some of these ideas came?
Well, I what I'd like to do is I'll also just ask before we do that is last night I thought Michael Moe did something interesting. I think he said a lot of interesting things, but I think one of the things that really stuck with me was playing the clip from Gilligan's Island and everybody knowing the three-hour tour. And almost nobody knowing the quadratic equation. So how does one make learning more fun, more engaging, more entertaining in a system which doesn't really allow for it?
The three things that have to be in a product like ours, one is it has to have great gameplay at the foundation. There has to be curriculum that the government cares about and a legitimate method of assessment of what's being learned. So you start with the game, and depending on, I think, the subject that you're trying to teach, you're going to probably design and develop a different kind of game. In our case, we have a platform for characters in a story that have quests and adventures and have conversations and have choices about what they do in the environment. It might be a choice like walking down a path and having some litter on that path and different effects depending on whether or not they choose to act on the litter or ignore the litter. And that may affect how the environment reacts to them or how the characters in the environment react to them. A lot of it has to do with, well, what characters do you encounter when you're trying to get something done on a quest and what happens in the conversations with those characters. So pretty much we're then measuring every choice that the player is making, and we're therefore branching and giving different feedback loops depending on what choices that they've made. And we're also scoring every choice they make against up to 20 different SEL measurements that are the essential characteristics in the teaching standards. So you've got to do all of that without the child feeling like it's weighted down and pedantic. So for example, we don't really give really long speeches. But basically, we have mentor characters that are in the game that are saying some of the things that a teacher might say in a classroom. But we believe that we have the attention of the player because they're paying attention in order to do well at the game. And we've, again, seen and heard this feedback from kids. And then, of course, we break it up and you can introduce a topic, like introducing something like the idea of what we call the escalator of feelings, and that feelings can be escalated. And that when they are escalated, you can use various tools to calm yourself down. And you know, we might introduce that initially through a mentor character and apply it to the avatar that's under the control of the child that's playing the game. And then later, we'll have another character be escalated and give the child a chance to help that character do what they need to do to calm down. And then later, you'll be back talking to the mentor, and he'll ask you about that to see if you were applying it, to see if you know why it worked. So in other words, we can be making these measurements continuously over a long period of time. And by spreading it out, then it doesn't bog down like sometimes a long lecture would or a long test would. And it just feels like it's naturally part of the story experience of what my character is doing in the game.
Great idea. I'm curious, have you had any feedback on this, for example, in youth detention facilities, criminal analysis and so on?
Yeah, I think there's opportunity there as well. Let's talk about bullying in that context, because in bullying, first of all, we've talked to a lot of parents, and it feels like 100% of parents are saying that their kid has been bullied in some form. And I think if we all think about it, we probably all had those moments as well. And of course, some kids, it's just absurd how they get identified, like the short kid that everybody picks on for being a short kid, or the fat kid that everybody... There's certain kids where it's just relentless persecution. And nowadays with cyberbullying, they'll switch schools and the rumor mill will chase them through the internet and they'll get screwed over in the next school the same. I mean, it's just really shocking and horrifying. So whether it's just an occasional bullying episode like I had to endure when I was a kid, or you're one of these poor children that's really persecuted, you've got this ratio, let's just call it 99% of victims and 1% that may be bullies. I'm not sure exactly what the ratio is. The question is, this is a dynamic situation involving both the bullies and the victims, and alienation happening on both sides. So one of the things we're aware of is that we can present these situations and we can give characters a chance to see what it feels like to be a victim, to see what it feels like if you end up bullying somebody else inadvertently and getting feedback about that as the bully. In the long run, I won't be satisfied unless we end up with bullies playing our game and learning about themselves in a way that makes them choose to not be a bully. That's the ultimate to aim for. But in the meantime, if we can help 99% learn how to cope and learn how to behave in a way that's less alienating to the bully, because some of these severe cases where the bully ends up getting a gun is because of severe alienation. They didn't feel like they fit in. They didn't like how they were being treated. They got isolated partly because of the behavior of the victims. And I'm not trying to put any kind of guilt on the victim side of the equation. Clearly, if we're going to reduce bullying and we're going to address these issues and really improve things, we've got to have compassion for the bullies and figure out, well, how did they become bullies and how do we unravel that and unpack that?
Okay, here's sort of an off-the-wall question. You've developed games now 40 years. You've been involved with games in one form or another. And we talked earlier about the mix with learning, and you refer to it here. I guess the question for me is, what is learning? What is meaningful about learning to you, and what is it?
Well, even when I was a child, what I noticed about was you interact with the environment, you know, and that's what we're built to do. So in human nature, we are active. We're not a plant, right? We don't just sit in a pot or, you know, sit out in the dirt and wait for the rain and wait for the sun. We go out and dynamically interact with our environment, and we collect information from observation and from the feedback from the environment about what we do. And this is something that's very common amongst mammals. So mammals have a limbic brain, which, say, a reptile wouldn't have. So we've got all of the cognition of a reptile about, you know, survival of the fittest and, you know, the old brainstem and stimulus response and fight or flee. And then we've got the emotional side of the brain that's common amongst mammals. And that's what's enabled mammals to be highly social. So, you know, so clearly the way we interact with the environment includes how we interact with other mammals, starting with other humans, but extending to, you know, how do we interact even with dogs and pets? You know, if you think about, again, the science, people that have pets live longer. People that are married live longer. People that pray or meditate live longer. These are all social behaviors in which you are communicating with another party. And so right there, boy, how much evidence do you need about what it is we need to know and what it is we need to focus on in order to thrive?
I think that's a great interview.
All right, just one last question then. Is there anything else that I didn't think to ask, didn't know to ask, you just want to add?
I just want to say, IF is on the iPad right now, and you can try it for free.